It's Golden Hour Adventure Time, featuring everyday people doing extraordinary things. From the peaks of victory to the valleys of defeat, these are their stories. Now, from the back of the pack, your hosts, Justin and Robbie.
Welcome to Golden Hour Adventures. Today, we have Jameson Collins. So I met Jameson, obviously, just like everybody else, through Instagram. And then he was also a recommendation from Heidi Quinn, but I think we had already linked up, had to get one of his sweet sweatshirts. So I haven't repped it yet because it's still like negative degrees out. And I don't think that, the material is supporting for those temperatures, but one of these days I'm going to rep that thing out here in some AK trail running. But anyway, welcome to the podcast, Jameson.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. What a terrible introduction that was to start this thing off, huh?
That's perfect, man.
Well, Jameson, you're kind of a badass in the ultra running world, right?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been doing this for very long, and I'm just trying to figure things out. So
I feel like that's kind of the way that I see my ultra running career going, like from beginning to end. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on and how do I do this thing, and then I'll die. So
yeah, <right.
laughs> probably never figure it out, to be honest with you.
Totally.
Well, I mean, you got a pretty impressive resume with Triple Crown, and what, you like a couple weeks ago you did a backyard ultra and you got well over 100 miles.
Yeah, I think I went for about 37 hours, 150 something miles. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an impressive resume. Don't sugarcoat it.
37 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
I did poop.
How many miles is 37 hours?
I finished 154, I think.
154.
Yeah.
And what place was that?
I think I was the fourth. There was four of us when I dropped out.
And okay.
Then another guy went a couple more yards than me and dropped out. And then there were two that went for like another 120 miles.
Oh my gosh. That's ridiculous. Crazy. So, yeah. So for you guys that are listening to the podcast, don't know much about a backyard ultra, your typical backyard ultras are 4.167777 miles. You do it, you start on the hour every hour and you go until there's one person standing, the backyard ultra / last person standing, a lap or a loop or out and back, whatever the route may be, is called a yard. And so when Jameson mentioned a yard, that's 4.1 mile loop, lap, out and back, whatever it may be. So super impressive. 37 hours. Oh my gosh.
It was a good one. Yeah. I mean, I've done three of them now, and that would have won the two that I'd done before. I was disappointed because I was trying to win it and make a trip to Biggs Backyard, which is like the world championship of that format. So I came out of it disappointed, and then I realized that it was actually, I mean, that's not bad. You know, that's,
yeah, I wouldn't say that's bad at all.
By most people's standards, I did good. So I was like, yeah. I got to give myself some credit, I guess.
I mean, I would say a vast majority of 100 mile runners have never done a sub 24.
My first. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Now, did you find that platform was easier to do a sub 24 or?
I mean, I think from what I've heard, that's like most sub 24 100 mile runners have done it in a backyard, or more people are doing sub 24s because of that format than ever before. It's really conducive to it because you have so much support. You usually have a crew that you see every 45 minutes, and you just are forced to rest. So I think it kind of works out.
Yeah.
Well.
Now, I don't want to give all your secrets away unless you absolutely want to, but like, what was your strategy going into the backyard that, I mean, I'm going to say successful because 37 hours, that's extremely successful. So
Sure. What
was your strategy going into it?
Well, so I trained pretty specifically for it. So I finished the Triple Crown of 200s in October. So I kind of had like a pretty good base to work with. And then we trained.
You know, kind of a good base. Yeah.
kind of.
Yeah, I just finished running.
We'll go into that in a bit.
Sure. So, you know, I recovered from that and kind of started training in November pretty specifically. So November, December, and then the race was January 20th. So we just kind of really focused on that specific format. And I have a coach and we kind of You know, we tailored that build specifically for that.
Who are you coached by?
Jeff Garmeyer.
Oh, legend. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he's done, you know, we hooked up because he's into FKTs and the longer distance stuff. And that's really what I'm into. But he's done some last person standing stuff. And so
I met him at Crazy Mountain in 21 or yeah.
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 Up in Montana.
Yeah.
Sweet.
The first year they ran it, I met him out there.
Did you do that race or you were just
I was Robbie and I went out and paced and crewed a friend of ours.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious about that thing.
Yeah, it's out there. When you think of Montana, you think of like vast wilderness, and that is exactly what that race is.
Yeah.
It is vast wilderness, and yeah, being able to sustain yourself for long periods will be very you'll be very successful in that race. Because yeah. there's spots where you could go 20 to 30 miles without crew. So,
yeah, so it sounds like a 200.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, he's a great dude. And he's got some experience with the last person standing stuff. So we kind of like just honed in on that. So I was like trained. I basically, what I did for 2 months before going to that race was, we did a pretty good VO2 max build, like worked on some fitness, improving off of what we came out of the Triple Crown with. And then I just started kind of making running suck. Like that was my whole approach. I'm going to wait until I have dinner and it's time to go to bed and I don't want to do it. And I'm going to go out and run in the middle of the night in the rain on a full stomach. And just kind of like started like really focusing on like doing things I don't want to do. Because that's kind of how it gets in a backyard. It's like you don't want to be doing it anymore, and you just have to get out of the chair and go run another lap. And
yeah, like, you gotta force yourself to get out.
Yeah, and you gotta force yourself to eat when you don't want to eat anymore, and you just gotta do all this crap you don't really want to do. Backyards are actually kind of miserable, but I don't know why. And this one specifically was terrible. I was like having a really bad time, and I was like, I'm done with these. And then about 2 days later, I was like, okay, I'm doing another. I got another one coming up next in April. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
So where's this one at?
This one's in Oregon. It's like 45 minutes up the road, and it's another silver ticket race. So it's another shot to get into the world championships.
Now, so can you jump into a silver ticket, or do you have to have won a bronze before you can do that?
No, the bronze gets you a free entry into the silver ticket that it feeds into, but you can sign, anybody can sign up for a silver ticket.
Oh, okay.
If there's an opening. And I was like, I signed up for this one last year, the first day it was open.
Oh, wow. So your ultimate goal is to go out to bigs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like one of my, I kind of set like two goals for the year. One of them was to try to get to bigs. And to do that, you have to basically win a silver ticket race or run like a bunch of yards. You basically got to run like 300 miles to get on the list. So that was like one of my big goals for the year.
On top of, you know, the Triple Crown that you.
Well, like this year, I wish I was running the Triple Crown again instead of trying to go to bigs and run these backyards and run loops around the freaking whatever, wherever I am. The same loop for 3 days straight or whatever.
Like, oh my gosh. That seems like a lot. What intrigued you about the Triple Crown as opposed to just going out and doing one of them?
Well, so I did one first. I did, so it's kind of one of those things. I ran my first ultra. I ran a 50K in 2022 in like January. And then I got home from that. I was living up in Anchorage at the time, up in Alaska. And I flew down to Oregon to take care of some stuff. And I was scheduled to run a 50K and it got canceled because it was like right in like a big wave of COVID. So I just went out in the woods around here and in Oregon and ran a 50K and it destroyed me. And I was like, well, I'll never do that again.
So that was in 22.
22, yeah.
You have opened up your career hard.
I dove in a little. I didn't dip my toes.
No.
I was like sitting at home, just totally broke off from this 50K. and I like registered for the Moab 240 lottery.
After a 50K?
Yeah.
I love it. God,
I don't know why I did that. I'm glad I did now, but yeah, I just threw my name in there. It was kind of a joke, and then I got drawn, and I was like, oh crap, I got to do it. So then I like tried to figure out how to, you know, that was January, and I ran Moab 240 in October of that year. So kind of went like had to figure a bunch of stuff out and showed up to Moab wildly unprepared and undertrained and finished in like 112 hours or something. Like walked across the finish line right before cutoff, totally wrecked.
Hey, but you finished.
Finished, yeah, totally. Like I did it with a buddy, and we finished that race every step of the way together. And during that race, probably about halfway through, we ended up running with this dude from Canada, this super cool guy, Ken, we met. And I was just intrigued by the whole thing. And I'd heard of the Triple Crown, and I asked him about it, if he'd ever do it. And he's like, you know, 50 something, and he's got three kids, and he's just busy. And he's like, I could never commit an entire summer to running 200 milers. And that just kind of stuck with me. I was like, I might not ever be in a position to do this again, so I should just do it now. And so I just like on the way home from Moab, I signed up for the Triple Crown before I had time to think about it.
And, that's so wild.
Oh no. I was
committed. At what point did you hire a coach to guide you through all of this?
It was actually the next spring when I was like started training for Tahoe, kind of winter into spring, I was like, maybe I should get some help with this, because I have no idea what I'm doing. It just worked out. He was opening up some spots, and we hooked up on Instagram, and it was a good fit. So
he's nice. Been
coaching me since, yeah.
So, and you got a great year to run Tahoe this year too, with those 20 extra miles and.
Yeah. All of the good things.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So,
walk us through Tahoe.
So Tahoe was sweet because, like I said, I finished Moab the year before nearly dead last. But I knew after I went out and ran a 100 miler in February of 23. So before Tahoe last year.
What 100 miler did you run?
It's called Love It, and it's in Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
It's a sweet race. It's actually like next
week. Next weekend.
I really want to go do it, but I can't. There's reasons I can't do it, but I would really just love to get on a plane and go do it, because I think I could crush it now. But it's a fun race. You start at 5 p.m. at night, and then you just run through the night, and then the next day, and then finish at night again, and it just rains the whole time for like 30 hours. It's an awesome race. You guys should go do it.
It's like a suffer fest.
Yeah. But it's cool. Nicest volunteers I've ever met. And there's an aid station like every 4 miles. It's kind of crazy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so I just kind of knew I was a different runner going into Tahoe. And I wanted, based on the training I was doing when I'd go out and do my like longer runs and stuff, I was like, I should be able to like, if I can just like figure out how to not waste too much time and move a little bit better later in the race. Like, I don't think it's too hard to place well in these 200 milers. This is kind of what I was looking at. And so, I got a coach and we kind of started fine tuning stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to try to move well and see what I can do here. And I kind of like worked backwards with some like pacing tables. And I was like, I think I could. I set like a time goal, and I was like, if I hit that time goal, I should be like in the top 10. And that was a ridiculous thing for me to say to myself, but that was kind of the point, is like, set a big goal and go after it and just see what happens. And so to cut to the end, and then I'll go back and talk about the race. I finished like within a half an hour of my time goal, and I finished in ninth place.
So wow.
It totally worked. And that was like, that blew me away. Like I was not expecting that. But it was basically just like, yeah, working with a coach that knew a lot about 200 milers and then doing specific training and like working on the details, not so much just like working on the running like everybody thinks, but like working on all the other stuff, like figuring out how to eat, figuring out how to sleep, and figuring out how to take care of your body, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I think that's really, especially in the second half of a 200 miler, like that's the usually the difference, because most people run, you know, a 30 something mile first 100 mile and then just like walk for another 100 miles and come in like, you know, at 100 hours or something. You just slow down so much. And that's what happened to me at Moab the year before. So I was like, if I can just try to figure out how to like do that second 100 miler in 40 hours or less, then I should be in pretty good shape, you know?
Yeah.
But it was an interesting year at Tahoe. It got postponed because they had so much snow. So it was supposed to be in June and it got bumped to July, and then it was like record breaking heat. Like we all got up there and it was like 90 degrees at like 9,000 feet and it just cooked everybody.
Yeah. I had a buddy that just like was roasting out there and yeah, didn't make it because of the heat.
Yeah. It was hot. And the first day, the first 100K took most people out. Like, or got people in such a bad position that they couldn't come back from it and drop the next day or whatever. But it was rough, dude. I remember sitting at this aid station and I was just like looking around at just carnage and watching people like barf all over each other. And like, it was nuts. I was like, it does not look like
when you're a very seasoned ultra runner and then you come into an aid station and you're seeing carnage and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Like, oh boy. But yeah, it was a tough one, but went well for me. Had a really good crew, you know, took really good care of me, and we just kind of stuck to the plan. And yeah, but I kind of came out of it like I was running with this guy, Damon Chavez, who's a super rad dude he's from Utah, and he's a good runner. He's like, he's making moves right now for sure. But we hooked up and we ran a lot of that race together on and off. And then I remember at like mile 180 when we were supposed to be 20 miles from the finish line, but it was actually like 40 because the course was 20 miles longer than it was supposed to be or something. we left this aid, or he was kind of packing up when I came into it. And then he ran onto the podium. And I remember at the end of the race, putting that together. And I'm like, oh man, if I could have done something differently for those last 40 miles, like I probably could have done a lot better. So that kind of gave me like, you know, some focus going into the rest of the Triple Crown. It just, my whole goal was just kind of keep getting better, you know?
Yeah. And then you had a short transition over to Bigfoot, right?
Yeah.
That month being taken out.
Yeah, right. Cause they're supposed to be like two months apart or thereabout, but they bumped Tahoe. So we got 17 days, I think, I had 17 days from finishing Tahoe to lining up for Bigfoot.
Wow.
Which I didn't know that was like not enough, you know, like I don't really know what I'm doing. I was like, okay. And everybody was like, that's going to suck. <You're> right. but yeah, it was like, I gave Bigfoot my best, but like, there was just no way like we could keep up. There was a bunch of fresh runners that didn't do a 200 miler 17 days ago. And you could tell, you know, like, but all in all, like it went okay. I mean, I finished in like 75 hours and got like 20th, and you know, it's like body did fine. Body hung in there. I got really jacked up after Bigfoot. I think that's when like, that actually set in was after doing both of them. And then I couldn't sleep for like a week and I was just like sweating and my heart was all jacked up. And like, yeah, it was a rough week and a half after Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Not being able to rest and recover.
That's a lot of pressure being put on your body for sure.
Yeah, totally.
You know, nearly running 400 miles. I mean, I know people do it all the time, but 400 miles in I think I got a phone call in the middle of that. That was very odd.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we won't edit that out because that's what happens.
That's life.
That's life.
Life.
Yeah, but, you know, doing 400 miles in, you know, essentially a month, that's got to wreak havoc on your body.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it wasn't really during the race that I felt it. I did have some sleep issues during the race. Like I didn't sleep well, and that's what made me kind of struggle a little bit. But like, it was really after the race that I feel like it took its toll.
Yeah. What was your sleep strategy during the races? We've interviewed another 200 miler that had a pretty interesting sleep strategy.
Yeah. So I think my strategy has been to sleep early and sleep often. Like I sleep the first night where most people are like, they don't, you know, they'll wait. They'll try to get through the first night and into the second day and try to get their 100 miles in. And I've just found that it's like that kind of jacks you up. And I like to sleep the first night if I can and just kind of reset and then treat it as like a second day. And usually that works out well for me, or it has. And I move pretty well during the second day, and I'm just passing people that are like zombie walking because they haven't slept.
Yeah. Now, how long are you sleeping? Are you doing like a 2 hour type deal, or?
We do like an in and out. So like it was like 3 hours from coming in, take care of everything, eat, change, do all that stuff, sleep a little bit, like lay down for 2 hours or whatever. But I've shortened it up. We kind of will do like 45 minutes of downtime, and that seems to work out a lot better for me.
Yeah, that's what the last guest was saying. They do enough to get into REM,
uh-huh.
And then, you know, find that is a, you know, sufficient amount.
Yeah, right.
Early and often, kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those like shorter and more often. I found really I haven't put it all together. I think when you figure out the sleep, like you crush 200 milers. I think that's like the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all trying to figure it out, and it's different each race for sure. But at Moab, I really like, I found that if I sleep in the evening, like I would always sleep late at night, like coming into aid station at like 3 a.m. or something, get a couple hours of sleep and then head into the next day. But if I like head into the night with a little bit of rest, it's like I move really well at night. So
yeah. Okay.
Kind of switching it up. Like I slept a lot of times at Moab, but I didn't sleep for very long ever, you know?
Yeah, you watch these elites throw it down with like 30 minutes of sleep through the whole race, and you're just like, how?
Yeah.
I mean, I get they're moving way faster than what I do. So, but
yeah, well, and it's like, it's the, I like couldn't figure it out either. But one thing to think about is like, they're finishing like 65 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know, you're probably going to go out for your first 200 miler and finish in like 90 hours. So that's
A day and a half.
We're going to sleep. We got to sleep. You can't, yeah. You're not pulling that off for 95 hours.
No.
So what I'm getting to is like, I'm going to try to sleep less and go faster.
Okay.
And it's probably going to be a disaster.
Well, you, after you, how long, you said it took about a week for your body to kind of regulate back to normal after Bigfoot?
Like, yeah. Just to get to like where I could sleep and not like sweat all over myself and like, yeah. Just to kind of get back to not like ready to train, just like back to baseline functioning like a normal human, like sleeping at night, eating normally and stuff.
Can actually walk down the stairs and.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my body wasn't like too bad soreness, like swelling kind of wise. It was just like, I couldn't sleep and I couldn't like regulate temperature and stuff. That was really weird stuff. But
That is odd. Good. What, you had about two months in between Bigfoot. Yeah. So it kind of normalized from Bigfoot to Moab again.
Yeah. Yeah. We just took like a nice long recovery period and then started moving again after probably a week and a half, transitioned into some good running and got like a little fitness build in between those two. For like nice. Between Tahoe and Bigfoot, I ran once, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's. I don't blame you on that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, what's it going to do anyways, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's just like, it's just to kind of remember that you're like, okay, I still know how to do that. Kind of.
I would imagine Bigfoot wasn't much of a run at all anyways.
I mean, it's a lot more it's not as runnable as the other two.
Yeah.
I did get some good like third day running in on that one, which is nice. There's some runnable stuff later on, and I finished that race pretty well. I just didn't do the first like 120 miles of it very good.
Hmm. Gotcha. So walk us through Moab for your second round, going back with a little bit of redemption.
Yeah. So coming out of those two races, and I just kept like learning things, like picking up things each one of these I did, you know, like how to sleep better, how to take care of myself better, just little things like getting a good, packing the right stuff around with me so I could always solve problems on the trail, whether it was like heartburn or sunburn or, you know, not getting sunburn or like Mucinex if you start getting congested, just all these little things. Having earplugs at aid stations, so you put earplugs in, you can sleep better because it's noisy. Like just little things like that started to add up to where like going into Moab, I just kind of like tried to execute all that stuff and it worked out well. And I was trying to push myself at Moab. I was like, I'm going to try to find that point where maybe I go a little too hard and it doesn't go well for me. But I was also like, I went into Moab third in the Triple Crown standings. And so I didn't want to like totally blow it in DNF, you know? So I wasn't conservative. I was just like, I'm going to start a little bit hotter than I normally do and try to like hang in there and see what happens.
Yeah. How many people typically do the Triple Crown?
You know, I think it's grown a little bit. I think it's generally 40 to 50, or it has been in the last couple years. And I think, I can't remember the numbers, but I think like 50 people started or were signed up at the beginning of this year. And that number got reduced significantly in Tahoe. Tahoe just wiped people out.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, there was still, I don't know how many of it, I think maybe less than 20 of us finished it.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of people that like don't finish it still do all three races. It's super cool. Like you DNF Tahoe, a lot of people still came out and did the other two races, you know? I think some people did the Triple Crown and DNF'd all three of them, but they were still there. And so it was rad. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, totally.
You're seeing each other again, like, oh, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. So,
well, how did you do it in Moab?
Good for me. Like I got fifth overall. And the guy who was in second, my buddy, Jeff Price, now we're buddies. He was in second in the Triple Crown standings and I was like 7 hours behind him. And cause the Triple Crown is cumulative hours overall, three races. And we swapped. So like on the last section of that race, he was like 8 hours behind me. And I was like, if I cannot let him get any time on me in this last 18 mile section, I'll beat him and get second in the Triple Crown.
Awesome.
And I was also racing for fourth overall on that section.
So, oh, wow.
So it was good, which that section, absolutely wrecked us last year. That was like we ended up, you come down off Porcupine Rim. It's this huge descent. The last 40 miles of Moab is a descent. It's like 40 miles of descending, which sounds awesome, but it's actually really hard. Kind of wrecks you.
Those trails are horrible right there too.
Oh yeah. It's like Porcupine Rim is just like this like gnarly rock garden. And there's like mountain bikes whizzing by you at like 40 miles an hour. And it's like, it's kind of a mess when you're 220 miles into an ultra. But the year before we literally got down to the pavement, like walking backwards. It's like, and I remember this is 22, the first year we did Moab. I was with my buddy TR and I was like, TR, it's 10K to the finish line. Like I can do a 10K in under an hour. And it's going to take us like 4 hours to get there. And it did. Like, we were like walking backwards because our quads like couldn't go downhill anymore. And then we like crawled along the pavement to the finish line. So racing for fourth, coming down the mountain this year and like running very well. Like that was the cool thing. It's like, that was my goal, is like figure out how to like run in the end, keep running through the end of a 200 miler. And I did that. And like, you know, we were doing like 10 minute miles on the last couple miles coming into the finish line, which was like, I felt pretty good about. So yeah, it was a good finish. It was a really good race for me, a good performance for me personally.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. And then second overall, that's really cool, man. Congrats.
Yeah, that's badass. Yeah.
Well, at what point in a 200 does your body just kind of accept what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that happens. Like, that's a good question, dude. Like for me, the first day is always just like a complete atrocity. Like my body just does not do well. And that's kind of any race. That's like what sucks is like this backyard I just did, the first like 18 hours were just like totally miserable. And then my body just says like, okay, this is what we're doing. And like, it just feels fine after that, you know? And as long as I can like keep my feet put together and like keep eating and drinking water, like I get better and better throughout, stronger and stronger. So for me, it's like a day, like usually like day two, sun comes up and I'm like, all right, I'm ready to do this for another 2 days. Like, good to go. but I think it's different for everybody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that your body just kind of is like, all right, well, this is what's happening. So
yeah,
we're just going to suck it up and go.
Totally. Yeah. And then I think once it realizes it's almost done, it kind of like stops working and you kind of fall apart right at the very end. Oh, we don't have to. Oh,
your like, brain tells you only have 10K left. And so your body's like, oh, I heard that.
Yeah, I'm down.
We're going to crawl.
We're going a mile an hour.
So you've done four 200s. You've done a very impressive backyard, 100 miler. What is a crazy, embarrassing story that you have experienced or that you've seen, or there's got to be something there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I hallucinate super bad, like super good. Like I get pretty disoriented, not really disoriented, but I get like, I have pretty legit hallucinations that I can tell are not real, but I've learned to just like have fun with them. But like, if you want embarrassing, like this backyard I just did, you know, Thomas Nolan, right?
I do. Yeah. That's my buddy. I was telling you that I knew
from Tahoe.
Yeah. The Tahoe.
Yeah. He's coming back for redemption for sure.
Yeah.
But I got him all squared away. Thomas came, me and Thomas are old fire buddies. We used to like fight wildland fire together way back in the day. And then didn't talk for years, and then like realized we both got into ultra running, and then like more recently hooked back up and hung out at Tahoe a little bit. But he came and crewed the Saguaro backyard with me down in Arizona a couple weeks ago, which was sweet because I didn't have crew. I was going to go do it by myself. Usually my wife crews and she was busy, and he was like, I want to go. So I went and picked him up. And he rolled down there with me, like drove 1,000 miles down to the desert and partied in the desert for a couple of days. Like the best crew person ever. Like he basically, I was like, Thomas, I need to eat and drink every lap. And like, he was just like so on it and he knew what to do. And he runs ultras and he had done a backyard. He went like 130 something miles in a backyard this fall, like his first one ever. So he's been, you know, that's pretty good for just like not, just kind of jumping into it and having no idea what to expect. So, but anyway, so he was feeding me and feeding me and feeding me, and I was eating and eating, and everything was going great. And then I started, I think I had my shoes tied a little. I wore road shoes because it was like not a very, it was like trails, but it was like nice, pretty buffed out granite trails, except for like one section. And on that one section, my shoes felt a little loose. So I like buttoned them down really good. And then at about 90 miles, like my feet started to hurt really bad. Mm-hmm. At that point, like kind of the damage was done. Like the top of my feet, it was like, you know, I had something going on. And Kind of problem solved it and worked through it till about 140 miles. And then at that point, like, it started to transition down into like my big toe. So every time I would like was transitioning off of my foot through my like stride, it got really painful. And like, I mean, like very, like the most intense pain I've ever experienced or had to deal with, where it was like shooting up the back of my leg. And I probably had been eating a little bit too much solid food, which is something I really try to do a lot of in, you know, longer races. It's like keep the solid food coming. You can do it in a backyard pretty well, but I was probably eating a few. You're having taco parties every lap. I probably had a few too many tacos. And at one point, yeah, I just like transitioned onto my foot, and like I had this pain shoot up the back of my leg, like, and I just like crapped my pants like right in the middle of the trail. And I'm not talking like, I'm not talking like a little bit, like I crapped my pants. And I didn't, in a backyard, you don't, it's not, you don't have like your full kit on, you know, you don't have like a vest with like a bunch of stuff. And so I'm just like out in the desert, and I like, it just crapped all over myself, and I didn't have any toilet paper. And I'm like, okay, well, cool. Well, like everything in the desert is a cactus. I was just like, I don't really know how to like deal with this right now. And it was like the second night, I've been running for like 35 hours or something. And I was just like, I think I just need to go have Thomas help me. So I like kind of like got back to camp, and I like went and cleaned myself up, and then had a moment to feel sorry for myself, and then started the next lap, and then, and it happened again. And like that became my dilemma, man. I was just like, I can't, like, I need to eat. I have, you know, it's an hour. Each loop is an hour. You need to run 4.1 miles, no big deal. But then you have to like eat, and you have to drink, and you have to get some rest, and you have to like clean poop off of yourself. And I was just like, I don't have time for all this stuff. Like, and it, yeah, that basically like was the end of my race. So I couldn't stop pooping on myself.
So I that'll do it.
That wasn't really embarrassing until I just like shared it with everybody. So I guess, yeah.
Was it like a disaster pants poop, or was it like solid?
No, it was like disaster. Like,
like marathon running down the back of your leg.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I don't think I've had that kind of experience since like I was a child, like a little child. Like,
Was it like a cough or a sneeze, or did it just like evacuate?
It was like a sneeze with stuff in the way, you know? Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was like, yeah, that was the end of my race. And then I like got properly cleaned up, and then I was like pretty bummed out that that's what did it. But
you still had more in you, you think?
Oh,
not
yeah.
Pain, I mean, like actually running capability.
Yeah. I definitely didn't have much in me after that, but running wise for sure, man. I mean, the foot injury was like completely self-inflicted. And I couldn't really like figure that out. Like, but like fitness wise and all, and endurance wise, like, yeah, I was good to go. Like I was very consistent. I was finishing every yard within like, for every lap within like a minute of each other, like super consistent, wasn't fatiguing, felt great. You know, wasn't tired, was eating good and sleeping good, you know, getting little naps and getting rest. And like, we were following the plan, and it was working. So
nice.
It was a bummer.
Cool. Well, let's transition a little bit. You own a pretty cool little company called Huda Trail.
Yeah.
Let's, where did Huda Trail come from?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It happened kind of fast. When I did Moab 2022, I remember like not really knowing, that's a really pretty extreme race. Like, it's a race of extremes. Like, you're down in the desert where it's like 100 degrees, and then you're up in the mountains at like 11,000 feet where it's like 7 degrees. You know, so it's like you kind of go through a lot in that race, and gear is kind of like if you don't know what you're doing, which I didn't, gear is kind of like a tough nut to crack. And I just remember, like, somehow I ended up out in the desert and it was like 89 degrees and I had like a puffy coat strapped on my back and I was just like, this is stupid, like, right? And then up in the mountains, I like couldn't really stay warm at night. And I like, so anyways, short story long, like after that race, I kind of started doing a bunch of research to try to figure out, like, you know, just learn about gear a little bit better. And I kind of stumbled on these like backpacking forums and stuff. And people were talking about this fabric that they were using, this like ultralight, super breathable, active insulation fabric designed for the military and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, this sounds pretty neat. And the more I read about it, I was like, well, that sounds like it could be really good for running. And so I was trying to get my hands on one. And there's a few small companies that make them at the time. But the fabric was like in pretty short supply and it was really hard to buy one pre-made from a company. And so then I stumbled on like this super cool, like DIY, like Reddit community of these people that were just like sewing stuff in their living rooms. And they're, you know, I was like, well, this is pretty neat. And there's a bunch of people that were like, yeah, you can just like, if you go get a sewing machine, you can just like order this fabric online and then sew one and make yourself one. And I was like, there's no way I can do that. So I went and bought a sewing machine and ordered some fabric and like started like sewing stuff together. And it was pretty, it wasn't going real well until it was. And then I like sewed a shirt that I put on and it worked. And I like went for a run in it. And I was like, well, it's pretty neat. And so I just kind of like went from there and I started making it for myself. And then once I started, I'll talk more about the fabric in a second, but once I started using it, I realized it is like for 200 milers. I think it's good for all running, like in a lot of different conditions, but especially for like multi-day stuff because it's so light and versatile. Like it's kind of, I think, the best thing out there. And so I was just like, I want to start making this for other runners. And then kind of getting more into 200s, I was like, I really want to like, nobody, there's a lot of folks in the backpacking community that know about it, but like not so much in the trail running community. And that's like kind of my thing is I want to like really bring awareness to some of the smaller companies that are providing technology that's just like not mainstream, but I think is way better. So that's kind of like my mission is to show up to a 200 miler and see a bunch of people wearing, not necessarily even my product. Like I'm tiny, I can't make very many of them, but I just want people to know about it and it to become more prevalent and mainstream. So I basically started sewing stuff in my living room and then started running a company out of my living room. And I was like, me and my wife and our two dogs were living in like a 400 square foot cottage where like it was literally one room. And it got a little bit wild in there because I had like started amassing huge amounts of fabric and was like sewing on the coffee table in the living room. Like it looked like a little hoarder's house. It was nuts. I got a little out of control, but we're out of there. I have my own like little, my little shop now in a new house we moved into. So
nice.
Things have improved. But.
So what makes the material special?
Yeah. So it's like, it's this like, so it was designed, like I said, by the military, and it's designed as an active insulation. So like down, you think like down feathers, that's more like for static insulation when you're not moving. Like, you know, if you go run in a down coat, you're just going to sweat and the feathers are going to get soaked and it's going to stop being warm.
Yeah.
So like this is made as an active insulation and I'll hold it up. This is probably stupid, but see how you can like see right through it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, the whole thing about it is like, it's a bunch of loft, but it's also really breathable. Like it doesn't trap moisture. So when you're moving and you start generating a bunch of heat, like that heat can escape through it and you can stay comfortable in when you're warmer. And it also isn't accumulating moisture. So when you stop, it's not like a wet layer that's wrapped around you. And that's where I found is the biggest thing for like in a 200 miler, when you lose the ability to stop, like regulating your body temperature, the second you stop, you like start jackhammer shivering, you know? And with this stuff, like you don't have a wet layer wrapped around you. And that's super helpful. And so, it's basically, it's loft that keeps you insulated when you're, when you need it. And then it's breathable. So those two things together kind of make this, this fabric that's really good for running. For
how does that work for like a base layer out in like cold temperatures where I run?
Yeah. So the interesting, there's different weights of it. There's different thicknesses of fabric. And so it works good as a, it works good in a system. So like a base layer, I like to wear it next to skin because if you wear something underneath it, that'll get wet and that defeats the whole purpose. So I like to just wear it straight on my skin when I run, and then I'll layer over it if I need to. So like if it's like 30 degrees, 20 to 30 degrees above, we're not talking like
I'm kind of wondering like what's it going to look like at negative 30. So I want to know 30, 20, and 30 below.
Totally. Yeah. So like in the like low 30s, like freezing or 20 degree temperatures, like it's pretty good once you get warmed up just by itself. Like I'll run at like 25, 30 degrees in this stuff all the time. But if I'm going to be stopping in those temperatures, I'll make sure I have like a wind shell or a rain jacket or something to put over it just to like trap your body heat in, and then you stay perfectly warm. But yeah, when you get into like the sub-zero stuff, like it will, it still will keep you super warm if you have, if you're, if it's part of a layered system.
Yeah. Yeah. You yeah. We definitely, like a that, that's layer. The secret is finding the layer system that actually works, and you're not going to, you know, sweat through it because our races are pretty remote and they're kind of set up like a 200 where the aid stations are 20 miles apart and that type stuff. So totally. Finding something that
sweat is like your biggest energy.
It really is. And sweat is your biggest enemy out there too.
Yeah.
Because once you get cold, what are you going to do? You can't warm up.
Totally. Yeah. I think I'm really curious. So I send a lot of these to Alaska these now, and I think somebody's going to kind of figure out like how it fits in a system really well, you know?
And you have a couple of different weights too, don't you?
I do. Yeah. So like the most common, the one I'm wearing right now, like the most common and the one I recommend for like most trail running is 90 gram, and that's 90 grams per square meter. That's just how they rate fabric, grams per square meter. So it works out to about like 3 ounces per yard or something like that. Meter, yard, close enough math. but it goes by gram. So like 90 is the most common. And then there's a 60, which is like not quite as warm, but it's much more breathable. And it's like a really great, like summer warmer climate, like mountain layer where you might get like caught in some cooler temperatures up high or something like that. Really good under like a rain or a wind chill to keep you warm, but like packs down into nothing and weighs like a couple ounces, you know, 60, 90. And then the 120 gram is like actually pretty substantial. It's like, it's got like a lot, like way bigger. It's like way fluffier. You can see, you know, it's a lot thicker. And this stuff's pretty warm. Like if it's like above 30 degrees and you try to run in this, you'll get too hot. Like, so this is, but it's still super breathable. So like, this is a good weight for like Alaska winter running.
Yeah. You know? But it wicks pretty good though.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's like, that's the thing is this stuff, your body moisture moves through it. And then like some of it will condensate, like you'll feel a little bit wet on the outside, but like moisture doesn't stay in the layer, which is really, it's a really interesting quality. Like it doesn't get wet and heavy, like a lot of layer, like a lot of even wicking layers will.
Yeah. Like your merino wools, once they get wet, like you're like, ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll keep you warm still, but
yeah, but they're like wet and heavy.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Totally.
Well, cool, man. What kind of gear are you using? I know we're talking about your shirts, but like, you know, what else are you running in, like shoes and.
Yeah. Yeah. So like for me, there's a couple I run in. I've been like an ultra dude for a really long time. And oddly enough, I like kept having like Achilles lower leg.
I wonder why. it can't be the shoes. It's gotta be something else.
Yeah. It's just, you know, me, my body sucks, you know? So I transitioned into shoes with like a little bit of drop. I just wanted to play with that. And I, have you guys heard of Speedland?
Yeah.
Yeah. Portland company, like kind of doing some weird, unique stuff with some really expensive shoes. I got my hands on some of those and really like them for the trails. And then Ultra came out with that Forward Experience trainer, which is like a modest, I think it's like a 4 millimeter drop. Super comfortable shoe. When I switched to the Speedlands, it had some drop, and then I would like put my Ultra like zero drop road shoes back on. Like that transition back and forth was not good. So I was like, okay, I just need to like go full, like fully into like a drop shoe for both road and trails. And so I pretty much have to do the Speedlands for trails and then those Ultras with a little bit of drop for if I want some road shoes or something. But I really haven't experimented much because I've been running in ultras like forever. And so I know there's all these other shoes out there to check out. Like I'm all these like Brooks dudes are promoting these things and stuff, and they look pretty sweet.
They are.
Yeah, I got some, but I do like the Speedlands. Like people are like, those shoes are really expensive. I have about 450 miles on the first pair I got from them, and they're like, they don't look brand new anymore, but they essentially like are like, and I don't run for them like or anything like that. Like they have given me a little bit of support, but like I will vouch and say that they're like, those shoes are built to last in pretty incredible ways. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the argument behind those shoes that, you know, they're $275, but you know, for me, 250, 300, that's about where I start to get the knee thing. And, you know, and that's kind of where, that's my point is 250 to 300. You know, I'm spending $150 on a pair of shoes. So if I buy two of those for 500 miles, that's $300 as opposed to 275, you know, so I can see it, justify it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, right.
If they're going to last 500 miles, but I'm skeptical. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people tell me they'll last, but it's still, it's just one of those things. It's like, are they though?
Yeah, totally. Well, it's like, so my Ultras, I was getting like, because here's the thing about the Ultras that I really didn't like is the mids or the insole that they put in those things like flattens out super fast. And I couldn't like, I could feel the difference in 200 milers. Like I didn't want that anymore. This like limp insole that wasn't doing anything. And I couldn't find a good insole to replace it. And Ultra wouldn't sell me insoles. They last for like 100 miles. And then I'm like, hey, can I get some more insoles? And they're like, no. And I was like, okay. And a lot of the insoles you can buy have drop in them, which like was in, like totally changes the shoe. And so I was just like, well, this is like, this is stupid. And those shoes just like weren't lasting that long. Like if I got, if I could get 300 miles out of a pair of Ultras, like I would be stoked. But that was,
yeah,
you know, I bought a lot of Ultras for the Triple Crown. We'll just put it that way. And I had a lot of Achilles issues. Not that those were related, but, yeah, I mean, I think for like for you, if you're getting 300 miles out of a pair of shoes, then it's kind of like seems like a wash. But for me, I was like, wow, like 400 miles out of a pair of shoes, that's nuts. And they're still doing good. Like, yeah, good deal. But yeah, that's it for shoes. And then other gear, like I'm pretty standard. I run in like the longer stuff, a Salomon Advanced Skin, like the 12 liter pack. It's a good pack. I haven't had a need to switch that up. There is a company that I really like that I don't know if you guys have heard of, Path Projects.
Yeah, I have a couple. I have a couple pair of their shorts.
Yeah, so I really like their shorts and their hats. Like some of their hats, they're just a cool company. They're like direct to consumer, like
yeah,
you know, which I think is a neat model. Like that's what I am, so I relate to that. Speedland is too, you know. So like, I think that's cool. But like. Those shorts, dude, are like great multi-day shorts. Like I have ran in, I did the Triple Crown in like two pairs of those shorts and they still look like brand new. They look brand new until I crapped in them twice at this last backyard. I had to buy some new ones.
I mean, I got shorts. I think I kind of saw them from the, when they like first came out and I got a pair of shorts from when they first came out and they're, and they still work. No, they're pretty solid. And
yeah,
they're pretty inexpensive too when it comes to like running gear, like quality running gear. They're pretty inexpensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. It's like the sticker price gets you, but then when you think about it, like they're in there for sure. And they do what I like is they do the separate base liner. You know, they're not an integrated base line or like an inner.
So you wear whatever you want.
Yeah. They have a few different fabric types of their base liners that you can get. And so that's pretty sweet. I like a different one for like winter, colder running. And I like a different one for like hotter summer stuff. So.
I'll have to try them out. I haven't tried them.
Yeah. Super cool company. So that's pretty much it, you know? And then I like my Kogala light for my hallucination fest in the middle of the night. That's another piece of gear that like, if you haven't played with a waist lamp or the listeners haven't, like, I think.
Yeah. The Kogala is pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. It's like dark all the time for you. So you probably do a little bit of waist lamp action.
Yeah. I've actually been playing around with quite a few, lights this year. And it was kind of cool to experiment with, I probably experimented with like three or four different, whether it be headlamps or waist lamps. And so, typically I was always a Kogala and that's all I would wear. And I've actually transitioned away from it. I've found, waist lamp that I like better. And I've comboed it with a headlamp. And so I kind of run like a really lightweight waist lamp with a really lightweight headlamp and it's worked phenomenal. And I'm really impressed. I got the wide view with the waist lamp and then I got the direct point with the headlamp.
Yeah.
So, running that two combo system seems to work really well. I've been really impressed with it. So,
yeah, I do the same, man. I always have both on and then I'll either switch back and forth. Sometimes I got them both on, but like, it's so nice to have the more focused headlamp beam with just like the wide angle waist lamp illumination, like that.
Combo yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, hey man, we always ask our guests at the end, who is somebody that we should have on the podcast? Somebody from your network that has a cool story, enjoys a good laugh. Who you got for us?
Yeah, I would. So my coach, I was talking about Legend. I would definitely recommend that guy because he's a hoot. He is a very unique individual. Good stories for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to, actually I've reached out to him and I have, I've been left on read. So, I'm going to use you now to make that transition for us.
Good deal. I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Hey, we'll give you a couple of minutes to shout out where people can find you on socials. How can they buy one of the shirts, the shorts, the socks, the hats, whatever you got?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So I do. It's Houda Trail, Houda Trail. I do everything on Instagram. Like I don't have a fancy website. I got a blog where I write some stuff about running, but just on Instagram is where I do basically like. You can go on there and you can look at all the stuff I sell. And I got like a little price sheet on there. It's super low tech, but it's all custom orders. The things that I do are custom color. You can pick all the colors and design it however you want. But I also do custom sizing, which is cool because a lot of people just don't fit in standard sizes. So if you have trouble like fitting in stuff, come see me. Just go to Houda Trail on Instagram and then send me a message and I'll respond. And that's how I do all my business. And
awesome.
Yeah, I stay booked out about like a month, 3 weeks to a month, so it doesn't take too long to get a piece of gear. If you have like a big race or a trip coming up, like I build time into my schedule to get like stuff out to people quicker. You know, like people are going on a long hike or like have a big race coming up, like I can get something to you in like less than a week.
Cool. So, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, thanks so much for coming on. It was a blast hearing your story. Yeah. I feel like we just touched the surface there. We can dig deeper. Awesome. Well, thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good chat with you guys.
Yeah, thank you.